Hello and welcome to this week's Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast, and now, we're delighted to say, on Spotify. I'm Aidy Packham and we are transmitting around the globe thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it's fair to say that last Saturday, things didn't go particularly to plan, with Liverpool putting five past the defence, which has been so solid this season. On Monday, Jermaine Genus ensured he won't be getting a Christmas card from Sussex Police after pulling out the ball that paired us a lot from up the road in the FA Cup third round. The tie will take place on Monday the 8th of January and will be the first game in this country to trial the VAR system. This weekend we head north to face fellow promoted side Huddersfield, hoping to get another win on the board before we'd head to Wembley on Wednesday to face Spurs. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. We're delighted to welcome back Andy Bass.
Hello.
And earlier on today we caught up with former Albion midfielder Kieran O'Regan.
Yeah, looking forward to that, to see what he's got to say for himself. He's, what is he these days? Has he still got his sort of like a diddly-dee accent?
No.
Oh no. But he's been at Huddersfield for a long time. I mean, this could be one of the worst accents ever.
Yeah. Well, he's
worse
getting on,
than mine.
He's getting on a bit now.
Actually, you can't say that.
He was only born in 1963, to be honest.
So that puts him at 54. I mean, I'll say that's a bit different from getting on, doesn't it? I mean, what would you say to anyone who's 54, Andy? Are they getting on?
Not really, because they're practically the same birthday as me.
Exactly. So, listen, AD, young whippersnapper with this getting on nonsense.
Yeah, just looking at that, he's 10 years older than me. Well, 9 years older than me.
The so, weird yeah, thing is, right. is that next month I can say I'm 50 next year. So, you know, watch it.
And all this flannel, ladies and gentlemen, in this red-hot soccer chat is because we're just putting off inevitable.
Yeah.
Because we have to
talk about
the
Liverpool game.
What happened
Must
on
we?
Saturday. Well, you know what? The scoreline says one thing, but the game said something completely different to me.
Yes. The scoreline said Liverpool won 5-1. It said to me that we lost 5-1. Yeah. First half hour, we were our imperious best against the top six sides, and we've seen us do that, set out our stall, set out to frustrate, hopefully, you know, sort something out on the counter attack. And it was all going to plan until they had a corner, Andy.
Yeah,
and to be honest, I think the most disappointing aspect of the entire afternoon was the one that actually set up the chain of events that saw us lose 5-1.
Well, the first whistle.
And that was the first... Oh, no, that was the first goal, because...
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to... But before we look at that one, we have to look at the side. And there was a couple of changes to that. And we saw Izzy Brown start for the first time at home since the Man City game. Mm-hmm. And we also saw Gaetan Bong return for Marcus Suttner. Now, we'd set up the team and we were playing pretty deep, so not to allow them the space to attack with the likes of...
And we were doing
Salah.
It very well, absolutely.
And then we go and get done by corner, which is we've defended brilliantly this season, Andy, but we did have a warning sign just before they did score that could happen.
Well, we did. They had a nice little move, a nice little toe-tapping move through the middle pretty much as soon as the game had started, and then I think there was a Firmino had her on the right-hand side of the goal. But the disappointing nature of that first goal from Liverpool, it's just like, basically, you know, Duncan Duffy have been our rocks. Duffy has got in front of more balls than anybody in the Premier League this season, and he just got done like a kipper on that. And it was a very, very simple goal for Liverpool to score, and they're, you know, they're capable of scoring far better goals than that, which they did almost immediately.
That's the kind of goal you concede at with Dean, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, in the fourth division,
poor goal.
It wasn't, you know.
But I mean, it could have all been so differently, because shortly before that, Glenn Murray had the chance to make it 1-0. And I still, for this, looking at the highlights again last night, I'm still trying to work out why he felt he had to take a touch.
Well, look at what happened a bit later. He didn't take a touch, and he still got the same result, i.e. not scoring. So,
well, at least he got that one on target.
Well, yeah. It's the thing is, what would you say about that? Before we talk about Murray shanking it into the away cop, was the brilliant build-up. And it just goes to show that at time, we, you know, we need to be at our utter best. But at times, we can actually pass through the likes of a Liverpool defence. Now, we know that Liverpool have got this reputation of being having a slightly leaky defence. But we were able to do it at times against Arsenal, at times against Manchester United. We can get through them. They have to be, like I say, at their utmost best. So when the ball did come in, and I think it was Izzy Brown, delivered it.
Yeah.
I think that, why did he take a touch? Because it came to him rather than slightly in front of him. If it's slightly in front of him, you just stick your leg out and hopefully, you know, it's going to go in. But it was actually to him. So at that time, you think, you know, maybe he could have taken it with his left foot. Who knows? But it's the touch he took. It's not the touch he took that was the problem. It was the fact that he then shanked it.
I think the fact that he was closely marked, I'm not sure which defender it was, but he was closely marked and the ball sort of came at him relatively quickly. I just think, and these are the fine margins, you know, when you're looking at the teams at the top and you're looking at the teams sort of in the middle or towards the bottom, you know, the elite players,
oh, they'll bury it.
They'll bury it first time. Now, Murray's a good player, but he's not an elite player.
No.
And he just, I mean, you know, he is a bit slow and he just needed that little more time to sort of get behind the ball. And he'll know that was a poor effort from him. He'll be criticising himself, and I think for the other two chances that he could easily have scored from as well, and he could have had four goals. I mean, it's just crazy.
The ridiculous thing is the game could have finished 4-9.
But it was a game that emphasised the small margins that, you know, when you play a team with elite players in it, that, you know, you don't need to ask the likes of Coutinho or or Salah twice to do anything. It's just going to happen, and you might have to ask one or two of our players twice to get something done.
But I mean, it's just so annoying because, I mean, defending corners is something we've been largely very, very good at. I mean, and we did concede from a corner against Stoke at home as well.
Yeah, and we actually, I mean, it wasn't a corner. I think it was a set piece. But actually saying that we're really good at this, and by and large in the air, we are very good because Duffy and Dunk are absolutely massive. But we also have, and it's not to say that he was at fault in this instance, but we do have a weakness in the back, which we touched on previously, which is where we've got defenders that don't attack the ball and they attack the man instead. So I think that there appears to be an overarching look at a need to look at how we defend set pieces, whether they're free kicks or corners or whatever, you know, even, I don't know, we haven't been victim of too many long throw-ins this season, but, you know, looking at how these things are done. And when it came to Emre Can just burying the header into the centre of the goal.
It was too easy.
Centre of the goal. Well, he was kind of on the penalty spot and no one picked him up. I don't think he was particularly any of our defenders were particularly blocking him off. But you've got to realise that by the time he landed, Duffy and Dunk were the two centre-backs, the two people that were closest to him.
Well,
even though, admittedly, Duffy and Dunk were actually marking someone else.
I think he started his run from a little bit further back than
possibly,
that.
Yeah.
But Duffy was looking at the direction of where the ball was coming from, and Chan just came across in front of him. Mm. And Duffy didn't seem to be aware that he was cutting in, and that's why he was able to just, like, you know, in one movement just go through and steal in.
Mm.
And there wasn't really a lot of time for Duffy to react to it at all, and he was, you know,
and we were done.
Just beat him.
But I mean, that goal that was easily defended. The second goal, you just have to hold your hands up and go, "Oh, bravo!"
Mm,
I mean,
no,
don't. It was such speed, the speed of movement.
But it was from our kickoff. The ridiculous thing it was from our kickoff. It was 79. Well, Naylor posted it was 79 seconds between the two goals. But I would imagine it's probably no more than about 20 seconds from kickoff to goal. Our players have gone piling forward. Yes, they were very good, but everyone, especially with the final ball in from Salah, was he the one that played?
Yeah, it was.
Everyone was sucked towards him.
Defending was absolutely shocking, but the speed of movement and the passing was just sublime.
The point is, if we'd defended properly and no one picking up, was it Firmino at the background, at the back post, then it would have been better defended. That's not to say it wouldn't have been a goal, but it would have been better defended.
But, I mean, they scored an identical goal in their 7-0 victory this week in the Champions League.
It makes us feel a little bit better.
And it was they're very, very good at this quick dissecting moves.
Well, to be honest, they scored another one in this game. So
yeah, quite.
I mean, what I'll say about this goal is, and about their third goal, it was they were useful goals. For, I mean, you know, now that we've lost the game, you know, you've got to analyse it and pick the bones out of it.
Yeah,
you know, in a way, they're quite useful goals for us to concede because we very much, Houghton was talking about the naivety of the players after the match in his post-match interview, and he's got something to show them when he sits them down and they'll look at those goals and he'll just say, okay, well, you know, this is your position here, this is what, you know, and like, I hate to say it because I actually thought Bong had a very good game, but on the two breakaway goals, it was him that really got sucked in that allowed the player, you know, that allowed Coutinho on the outside, and It, they were sort of like drawn towards like the man in possession, and they're sort of like watching the ball. They're not really aware of the space around them and which Liverpool players are moving in and out of the space.
Well, we got suckered that exact same way against Arsenal.
And the thing is that you can coach that out. You can make players aware of it. You can instruct them into, you know, being more aware on the pitch. That's probably not something that's going to happen overnight when you're playing against quality players who are really good at disguising their runs and timing everything.
But
but we can use that to
just to play devil's advocate on this one. I mean, do you think that in a game like that, Marcus Suttner would have defended better?
Not necessarily. You can't tell.
Not necessarily. I mean, you're quite correct to say it was sublime play from Liverpool. It was absolutely fantastic, incisive breakaway play from good quality players who knew. They all knew where the other, you know, where their teammates were going. I mean, you know, they knew what was going to happen. No, I mean, Our defenders did not. It was like
a Nanti knockout run, dribbling past and getting past the defender. It was just like boom, boom, boom. It's just quick passing, and it's like
it's the nature of being a top six player. You notice that actually with all the quote top six, they all are actually very good going forwards. As to how you can judge their defence, then that's a different beast entirely. Mm. And like I say, I mean, if we talk about sort of players getting suckered into it, like Sanchez offered a sublime bit of skill for Arsenal's second goal, and you realise that actually by the time the ball went in, there's about six players around Sanchez and none around the goal scorer whose name escapes me. But you've got
Iwobi.
Yes. So you've got that let's say that almost like that playground mentality, that naivety. But if you're talking about, you know, who's going to be better at doing this? It is a case of just being that much more disciplined. Yes, there's Liverpool are excellent going forward. We knew that. And even in, what was it, 3-5? Because we had a fair few defenders back. But, you know, they're fast. They know they know where each other's going. And on a certain level, it's frustrating watching the Albion because we do have some decent, fast-going players. And yet,
well, We don't move the ball that quickly.
And yet, when sometimes, you know, my criticism of us going forward is that actually I fear that we could very soon be a theatre of trees where with Dean there was, you know, the trees that was beautiful on the outside and the trees actually now at the Amex are actually on the pitch because that's sometimes about as much as they move. The ball goes forward, Knockhart's going to go on a mazy run and everyone just stands still thinking what's he going to do next because they haven't got a clue. The difference with the top six side is that they've got players that can do that and know where he's going to go and put themselves in the right place accordingly.
So basically what you're saying is it's the movement of the other players.
It's the movement. Knowing full well that, you know, because every single decent player knows three or four passes ahead when they receive the ball. Yeah. They know where it's supposed to be going. And if they don't, then they've got another option or another option. Yeah. I mean, we don't play that yet.
Okay, but I mean, obviously we lost the game 5-1, but I'm trying to pick the positives out of this. And one of the real bright spots to come out of that game was Izzy Brown, who I thought was brilliant.
Absolutely.
In the second half, certainly. Yeah,
and it was his cross for Glenn Murray. I mean, defensively there was a massive question,
and I saw that Bong was actually sort of, you know, pointing the finger at him, saying, you know, you're supposed to be there, kind of thing. But once he was in place, then Liverpool didn't threaten too much down their right hand side as much as they could have done.
But he was silky, Andy.
I thought Brown looked like the player that gave us such a hard time last season. For the first time, and he was, you know, given space to breathe in you know, being started in a home match, and yeah, I, you know, I, I thought he said, keep me in the team with that performance. I thought he was very good. I thought he offered something different to our other wide players. Obviously, he's got that flexibility that he can move into a more central position. But he actually worked really well in that wide position.
What he was doing, he was actually getting to the byline and actually getting across in the box. I mean, you've got... Escuero tries to cut in. Sully Marsh does try to get there. He tries to ping it across the on the ground.
Let me ask this question to you then, Andy. You say, you know, that was a performance that keep me in the team. Would you say keep him in the team in that position?
Yes,
with the possibility of actually putting him somewhere else.
I would
put him somewhere else on Saturday
against Huddersfield.
Yes,
because
we've got two games coming up this week. We've got Huddersfield, obviously, and we've got Spurs, which we're going to talk about as well. But I think Pascal Gross needs a day off on Saturday. I think he looks like he's running on empty. I mean, when he's running at full power, he looks like he's running backwards anyway. But it's he's. He's not the quickest, but I just think give him a break and then start him at Wembley on
he's
Wednesday.
He's had the break this week, hasn't he?
Whilst I would not necessarily disagree with that comment, I would start him in the same position because I've just watched him play really good in it. And if I'm going to pick him again, I want him to do that again. I don't want to like say, well done, Izzy, now go and do something else.
But is it a waste of his time having him out there?
Well, no, not on that performance.
Bearing in mind we've got other good wingers.
He could have. Well, he basically put two chances on a plate for Murray, and really, if Murray had finished better, he'd have had two assists.
So,
I would say. I would say, do that again.
Okay.
Well, and on such things, games turn because we came out in the second half. We were bright. We were attacking them. And Izzy Brown put it on a plate for Glenn Murray, and 9 times out of 10, that's in the back of the net. But Mignolet saved it, and then 10 seconds later, it's in our goal.
It's annoying. That is really
annoying. So, I mean, you know, Glenn Murray scores that, I mean, this is if and ands and pots of pans and stuff, isn't it? But, I mean, Glenn Murray scores on that, 2-1, right at the beginning of the second half, the crowd gets up. It's a very
different
game.
Absolutely. And... and Liverpool would have just had to wait another minute before they then got their third. So, you know, straight from the kickoff. It is one of those things. It's irritating, and we know that while we're in the Premier League, as if there's anything as us fans can do about it, but we know that we've got to take the very relatively few chances that we have in each match. And you don't want to be seen to criticising Glenn Murray, but... He should have buried them. And all right, it's just that kind of emotional thing of feeling you've got to blame someone or something for it. But you know, just Glenn, kick it. You know how to do it. Kick it in the goal.
I don't think we're saying anything that Glenn isn't saying to himself.
Sure.
We all love Glenn Murray in this room, and he's a very good player. Sometimes it's not your afternoon. It just wasn't his afternoon. I think the chance that he had later, he had a lot of the goal to look at for that third chance.
I'm trying to think of a third chance.
That was it. I mean, we just got taught a lesson.
Yeah.
And again, Liverpool really, really fast on the break and the defence at sixes and sevens again.
Well, it's just, again, it was a repeat of the second goal. It was just... superb quick break from Liverpool. They just sucked the defenders in, and again it was Bong that left the space behind him, and it's a real shame because I thought those two moments aside, I thought Bong had a terrific game.
I did,
but there was two goals.
Yeah,
okay. But you know what I liked about us in this game.
We kept going.
We never gave it up. We kept going.
And probably our downfall.
Somehow we got a penalty.
Well, you could see there was the merest of pushes, and
I think that was a pity penalty. Thank you very much, referee.
Save it for a game where we're actually not where it doesn't count. Yeah, save it. You know, it's if it was making up for the one we didn't get against Stoke. No, save that for another game. Thanks a lot. It's a game where we're going to get stuffed 5, but yeah, there was the merest of pushes. Yes, it does take a lot usually to knock Shane Duffy over. But I suppose if you're actually in the air, then a push can actually be exaggerated. Jordan Henderson doing his own Alan Partridge. I didn't agree with that, and I told him that. Well, bully for you.
Yeah.
But a penalty it was, too bad.
And can we also, at the same time, Glenn Murray finished it with...
aplomb.
Actually, he did. I was fully expecting him to drive it down the middle. But no, he buried that. And these are the kind of penalties that you want to see. Because, all right, you want to see all the penalties go in. Great. But yeah, he buried that. That was beautiful.
And shortly after that, he did have a chance to make it 3-2 and reduce the arrears again, where he had a whole goal to aim at and he volleyed it wide.
He just seemed to drag his foot round the shot. And, I mean, it didn't look so bad from where we were sitting. You were just going, ooh, like that.
How's it go?
Ooh.
Okay.
And
you've just broken our mic.
But then having, you know, but when you saw it on the sort of the reverse angle on the replays, and you just think, oh, my God, he had like 7 or 8 feet. Of empty
wasn't
net.
Quite the whole goal. He had
more than half the goal to aim at, and you just think, oh, it must, and that's the view he would have had. He would have just been gaping. It must be so frustrating for him.
Andrew, he wasn't looking at the goal at the time. It was over his shoulder a bit, so you know, in that sense, you know, he lost his bearings by the sake of a couple of feet.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, yeah, he took it. He pretty much took it first time, so we're pretty
left alone in it.
I mean, the replay showed
it was an easier
chance than we thought it was initially, and someone Glenn clearly wasn't having a great day. But I mean,
I'll just quickly say it did show that, like I say, with those three chances, Liverpool's defence is permeable.
Yeah,
but we just didn't take advantage.
We knew that Liverpool would give you chances. It's just when those chances present themselves,
you've got to take them.
I mean, and Esquerdo had a chance later on in the game where he got a mazy run in the box.
It was a very good tackle in the
end. It was a good block.
But then we go, concede a free kick, and Coutinho, who was... Oh, actually, let's talk about Philip Coutinho, Al, and Andy, because Andy, you particularly were like waxing lyrical about him afterwards.
Just quality player. I mean, Liverpool, one of those teams that can, you know, blow hot and cold. They can sometimes play very poorly, but they're star players. Played like stars.
Yeah.
And Coutinho just pulling all the strings. He was orchestrating everything that they were doing. I was really worried about Salah before the game and almost forgot about Coutinho. And Coutinho just bossed it, and you just got to watch a really good footballer play really well and, you know, show our team and our players who are, you know, that's what you should be aspiring to.
But they can't. The players aren't there to watch and admire it. They've got to try and do what they can to stop it.
They've been frustrated, but you know, they can learn. I mean, the main positive out of this game for me is we showed a lot of character, as you said earlier. Our heads did not drop. Mm. We didn't fold. All of their goals were like really on the break and slightly. They weren't, you know, on
the first.
They were opportunistic goals. So it's not like we were under tons of pressure for the whole game.
Interesting thing was,
but we can learn from how those little things were exploited by them.
An interesting thing was that, I mean, obviously this is what managers get paid for, and it was one of the Liverpool analysts who pointed out to Klopp. When we're faced with a wall, with a free kick in that position, the wall always jumps.
I think everyone's wall does. I think pretty much everyone's does. And listen, that free kick, it was perfectly executed, but because it's in the Premier League, they can, and because it was, you know, a top player who finished it, they can all scream and shout about it. But this old thing of when you watch an FA Cup match and someone scores an absolute worldie, and if a Brazilian had done that, they'd be talking about it forever. Well, this is exactly what happened. Knockout's done that before. Forestieri's done that before. Knocked it under the wall because they've jumped. And because it didn't come up with a desired effect, in other words, illustrated the keeper, you know, it's forgotten. But yeah, all right, it was good, it was neat, it was clever, but, you know, sorry, it's been seen before.
Also, they were 3-1 up at the time, so he could kind of afford to take a bit of a chance with it.
Absolutely. I mean, it could have looked stupid if it had just hit it, trundled it slowly
into the wall. I suspect if that game was 1-1, then the ball would have, it would have been a more conventional free kick.
And then Lewis Dunk scored an own goal. But then we said that before.
Can I just also say
He was stretching to try and, you know, head it wide of the goal. I mean, it was unfortunate.
Yeah. Can I also say that we haven't actually touched on this, and we don't like to be critical too much of our heroes, and we should support them, but on the ball, I've got to say that Stevens and Proop have both had an absolute stinker.
Would you say it's time to bring back Baron Kyle?
Nope, but those two have to just work on their passes, on their range of passes.
I still think that... And possibly even by the turn of the year, Baron Kyle will be a regular starter again.
I'm not sure who's going to dislodge at the moment, unless there's a suspension or injury, then in which case, obviously, he comes in. But for the time being, I think that Chris will just stick with...
I just personally think, and I'm not... This is no criticism of Purple and Stevens, but Baron is faster in his head, and he's faster...
For me, he's a ditherer on the ball,
yes,
though.
Yes, but
so.
he will play... He will. Well, he's capable of moving it faster.
The other thing
and
about,
forwards.
The other thing about Stevens and Purple and Gross as well is that all three of those guys, they're playing every game.
Mm-hmm. Minute of every game.
They're playing every minute of every game, and they're running themselves into the ground. Mm. Whether we feel they're having a good game or a bad game, every game they're doing a lot of work. Mm. And that has got a great... And I can, you know, I could see... I mean, I think Kyle could come in for any of those three.
Could he play a number 10?
Actually, I'd prefer to see him play in Gross's role rather than...
See, now, I mean, you know, you mentioning him there, saying, well, you know, maybe you put Brown in the Gross role. Why, you know, if Kyle is considered fit, you know, why not give Pascal a day off?
He's a forward-looking and forward-thinking midfielder.
Keep Brown out wide and put Kyle in, Pascal
Chris,
Gross.
If you're listening, Chris, don't thank us.
We do know that Chris listens to this show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Religiously.
Actually, we know that he doesn't, but, you know, if anyone wants to get a message to him, we've just sorted out your midfielder issue.
And Sam Bullock.
Another matter entirely.
We're moving on. You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast, and now on Spotify, which is great news.
It's great news, yeah. Thank you to Anthony Martin, our colleague at Radio Reverb, for actually sorting that out for us. So, yeah, I'm not sure how to find things on Spotify, but just go to Spotify and look for the Albion Roar.
It appears that most of our archives on there as well.
Everything from this season is on there.
So, which is great. So if there's one you've missed, go and check it out. But we are, of course, brought to you in association with the now back in the UK, Phil Shelley's oldfootballshirts.com. And he was delighted with the cup draw, unlike the rest of us, but we'll talk about that in a minute. He has given me a shirt of the week this week, and I'm just going to pass this over. And I've got to say, Andy, before he said, in Phil's defence...
Yeah.
He did say, Andy's not on the show this week, is he? And I said, why? Well, if he is, we better not use this shirt.
Let's have a look then. Okay, it's a kind of a 1972 nylon carpet rug thing in pattern. It says Heck across the middle. I can't see the badge because Andy is looking at it, but it's kind of orangey, browny, reddy, very G-plan colours.
It's got sausages on it.
Is that what it is? This is what happens when you look at a distance. It looks like a 1970s carpet.
It is a Walls Bangers advert drenched in blood. It's horrible.
Says the vegan.
Yeah. Well, you can have vegan sausages, but I'm not sure about
these ones. Those are not Linda McCartney's.
Okay. Well, okay. And I can tell you now that the club is called Beedale AFC. What they've got to do with sausages, I'm hoping that Phil has told you. I mean, it's sausages called Heck, really?
Yes, there is a brand of sausages called Heck.
Okay,
yes.
Go on then, Faro. What's Phil told us?
He goes, well, here you go, chap. I found this in the enormous pile of post when I got home this morning. He's been stranded in Australia for the last 3 weeks, and yes, that's another
with a
story
leg that actually should chop off and barbecue, frankly.
But this is the 2017 to 2018 home shirt of Beedale AFC, who play in the North Riding League Division 1 in North Yorkshire. Beedale are sponsored by the local food company Heck, and this season they went the whole hog with the shirt design featuring Heck's main product range, the sausage. The design has caught the imagination, and they managed to get recognition in the press across the UK and Europe, and here it is now on Radio Reverb. Beedow Association Football Club was officially formed in 1933. Prior to that, there was a team called Gasworks Celtic playing in the town.
Hence the sausages.
But the sporting Grayson family have roots in Beedow. Adrian Grayson is the current chairman and has been involved with the club since 1967. Both Paul Grayson, Essex County Cricket Club, and Simon Grayson, former manager of Sunderland, Leeds and Preston and Huddersfield as well, as all played at for Beedow. Also, another pair of sporting brothers, Michael Duff, Cheltenham and Burnley, and Shane Duff, Cheltenham and Bradford, have both played as youth for Beedow before going on to play professionally and represent Northern Ireland. So there you go. Thanks for that, Phil.
If you've got these things on the barbecue and you turn them over, is that flipping heck?
Do not.
Sorry, Andy, but they are actually very nice sausages. Actually.
How do you know?
I've had them.
Oh, okay. Well, oh, okay.
You can get them in every supermarket.
They're a hecker in Waitrose.
Oh, okay.
I know that.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Phil.
Yeah. Okay. Very shortly we're going to hear from Kieran O'Regan. But first, we've got to talk about the other news this week, which was the FA Cup draw. Now, it's been met with a mixed response, Andy. It'd be fair to say.
Well, after the grubby events of last Tuesday and just like the somewhat tedious circus that surrounds our games against Crystal Palace, we get them again straight away in the FA Cup.
Well, because basically, I mean, this is the thing that people
what
are actually.
Else would you be
I mean,
coming all, down with?
With cup fever, people are actually getting excited
we don't have
about
cup
it.
Fever.
People are getting excited about it, actually talking about a game in the third round of the FA Cup, which we haven't had for quite a while.
Not because it's the cup, believe me.
Well, but, I mean, if we'd have drawn Crystal Palace in the third round of the FA Cup last season, everyone would be creaming themselves about it.
Yeah, well, you have to put this whole draw in context, and therein lies the issue. Straight after, like as Andy just said, a grubby circus. I don't think the reaction was mixed. I think it was universally facepalmed.
I would agree with that. But I mean, we can't do anything about it now. The game's now going to be played on Monday, the 8th of January. It's going to be on TV, and it's going to be the first UK trial of the VAR system.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
Obviously, I think if we'd have drawn Milton Keynes at home in the third round like we did last season, then we would have seen wholesale changes. But do you think this puts pressure on both managers to play a stronger side than perhaps they would like?
I've got to say... go on, you go first.
Well, I'm going to say... Well, before we play that game, we've got how many more league games?
Lots.
Four or five?
I think the last one prior to it is the Bournemouth game on New Year's Day, though, isn't it?
I think, yeah. So, you know, a lot could happen in terms of the league before we play that game. That will determine the sort of team we put out. My suspicion is that we will be putting out an FA Cup team and not a number one league team. I don't think that Chris Hughton or indeed Roy Hodgson would change their plans. They are unmoved by the rivalry and all the hoo-ha that goes around this game. And to be honest, if it's our reserves beating their reserves, I'm going to be just as delighted about
as if it was
like a first team matchup for me beating them. You know, with whatever team,
tiddlywinks, connect four.
Beating them is the important is the important thing. Not which personnel we've got out and not which personnel they've got out. That's it will be fun for if any of those fringe, if it is a mostly fringe team, it will be a good experience for them. It'll be however many people are there. I don't think it'll be a full house, but I think it'll be raucous, and it'll be a cracking atmosphere again, and hopefully lessons will have been learned from last Tuesday, and we won't have some of the more unpleasant, unsavoury aspects of it.
Well, I would have hoped that the 150 people that didn't get in will be given free tickets for this.
I mean, to be honest, I think when we look back on that Tuesday night, I mean, really, take the guys in black. I won't name them in case it wasn't just the group that we all suspect it was, but But you know, but if you take though that group of people out, then it was relatively,
it was handbags at the station,
Yeah, you know, you're going to get that sort of, you are going to get some of those natural tensions.
As Darren Balcombe said last week, it's both sides.
Yes, it is. It's absolutely. I mean, there will be an element of our support that will want to spice things up as well. But really, that group aside, the main disorder came from them. Take them out of the equation, and it was a boisterous night. Yeah. And we can all get on with it, as long as people, you know, confine it to, like, you know, yelling at the opposition and wanting their team to win. Now, if we can all, you know, just behave and get on with it, we can all have a good night. So,
and I'm not convinced that the whole cup thing is actually going to fire up an atmosphere. I mean, let's face it, we're in the Premier League, two relatively nervous teams, slightly shot to pieces on confidence at that time. I think that the atmosphere in that game was probably mooted by the fact that a lot of Palace fans in their end had realised that something hadn't gone particularly well, or something wasn't quite right at their end. So they were sort of not imploding, but sort of a lot of their stuff was going back on themselves. And as a game, because the game itself was so dreadful, the whole thing sort of kind of, I wouldn't say it died a death, but it wasn't as raucous and loud as it could have been. Now, the FA Cup, different thing again, but I'm not sure that this whole notion of cup fever is going to literally fire everyone up.
Well, I mean, it's a game of football. It's against Crystal Palace.
Well, that's the theory, isn't it?
It's your main rivals. Whatever team, I mean, at the end of the day, whatever team Chris puts out, there's a chance for one of our players to make a hero for themselves, make a name for themselves.
Yeah, imagine if, you know, if someone like, you know, Aaron Connolly gets the winning goal. That'd be, you know, that's the sort of stepping stone to starting your first class career, really. And so it's a great opportunity, and once that whistle goes, it'll be on, and it'll be rocking in.
But then the more cynical side of me thinks, well, this is seriously cynical, is that the team that does win obviously then has another game in the FA Cup. Means that their fixture is going to get a little bit more congested. I mean, don't forget, we can't even necessarily rule out a replay here. So, you know, we can
rule out a third replay. We can
no Crystal Chalice, but no, I'm just wondering, whether the extent of further consideration of someone else in the cup. Supposing, let's say a big supposing in the fourth round, Crystal Palace get through and they've got a relatively easy tie. They're going to get through to the fifth round. They've got other games to play and other things to consider. What I mean is, it can take their eye off the ball in the Premier League. Well, we are both in a relegation scrap. No matter what way you want to look at it, we're both in a relegation scrap. And every single point and every single advantage that anyone can get will only ever help.
Well, I honestly do see your point. I take your point, but I disagree with it.
Because
your job as a football club is to try and be the best you possibly can. And yes, success for us this season would be to maintain our place in the Premier League. Yes, I buy all that. But at the end of the day, the FA Cup, it's an opportunity for you to win a trophy. Mm. You know, and every club, like you got like a Stoke or a Burnley or a Southampton, clubs that are now established in that league and are doing well. You've got to take this competition seriously, because you know you never know you might get to Wembley and win this flipping thing.
Mm.
I think for the teams that you've just mentioned, I think that is true, and I think it's disappointing that they tend to do it. I think in our position, I would probably err on our side of the argument. I think for this game, we want to win it, but I don't necessarily think we should be picking the in quotes first choice team for it. But I mean, that decision's up to Chris. But I think you can have a run in the cup if you give these other players a chance. And we're talking about these other players as if they're just like not proper footballers. Well, yeah, they are. But where else are they going to be able to play?
We're going to need those players
at various points in the season. Mm.
But us losing the reserve league, which we always used to have, and which was a great grounding for, because basically, if you've got a lot of players in your team right at the moment, so you've got the likes of Yuri Skalak and Jamie Murphy, they're not getting in the squad. They're not playing for the under-23s. They're just turning up every day, going to training. They're not getting matches and not getting match fit. Now, in days gone by, they would have been playing in a reserve team league in the Football Combination or the Northern Alliance, as it is, was up north. And they would have at least be playing matches and getting themselves match fit. Obviously not to the same level as it would be as playing league games, but they would be playing games of football. And the absence of that, I think, actually hurts us. And I think when you've got the under-23s, yes, you are allowed a couple of...
Are you saying there should be a bit more squad rotation? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying there should be a reserve league.
Well, there isn't. So, meanwhile, we have to deal with what there is. So, if that was the case, and I take your point that actually the likes of Skalak and a few others not getting game time being such a concern, especially when at some point they might well have to be thrown in at the deep end, then the only other way around that is, well, there's two ways around it. There's one is you have squad rotation, or B, you send them out on loan, which completely undoes the point because you then can't get them back anyway. Or you send them out for a month's loan in order that you know that someone's actually playing properly.
I mean, it's
not easy. I take your point. It's not easy.
I mean, for instance, you could see like Goldson and Hunemeyer, starting in the middle in the centre of defence in that game. Mm-hmm. And what is wrong with that? Who knows? Next season they may be our first choice.
Absolutely.
And they're good.
Well, come
enough.
January, there's a very good chance that Connor Goldson will be in the first choice defender if the rumours are true about Lewis Dunk. But that's another story.
Rumours are irrelevant. But so yeah, we can all sort of go absolutely batty on rumours. But
we can. And the Bananarama are actually playing. Okay. Brighton this week.
They heard a rumour as well.
Well, back in 1982, they would have played at the Brighton Centre as well. And another person who was playing in Brighton back in 1982 was Kieran O'Regan. Now, I caught up with Kieran earlier on today. Are you still living in Huddersfield, Kieran?
I am. I just live in the outskirts in a place called Home Firth.
Oh, right. That's where the film Last of the Summer Wine.
That's the place.
So Kieran, we're playing Huddersfield for the first time in the Premier League this week. But obviously, you're very fondly remembered here at Brighton. So what do you remember about your time at Brighton?
Well, I was quite lucky. I happened to be there at the time of the Cup final. So magical memories. I had five fabulous years down there. Really enjoyed my time down there. Great bunch of lads, especially the lads around the Cup final.
Yeah,
because you came in touch.
You came to the club in '82, and we couldn't quite work out whether you actually came on in the Cup semi final, but you were definitely substitute that day, weren't you?
Yeah, I was sub at Highbury against Sheffield Wednesday, and you remember the screamer from Jimmy Case, the free kick from about 35 yards.
Yeah, it was a beautiful goal.
Yeah, fabulous. I think, was it Michael Robertson got the other one?
It was, I believe, yeah. And Imre Varadi got the one for Sheffield Wednesday, I seem to remember.
I don't think it was Varadi. I think it was it was a foreigner, maybe a Yugoslav at the time. Can't think of his name, but it wasn't Imre Varadi. But it was 2-1, 56,000 at Highbury on that day. It was a beautiful, sunny day. And it was just incredible. And then obviously we had the helicopter trip to Wembley, which was fabulous. Yeah.
So what was Brighton like for a kid coming over from Ireland?
Well, to be fair, it was very difficult for me to begin with because we came for a week originally on trial, just for 1 week. And the club asked us to stay for 2 weeks, which we did. And then the 2 weeks were up and they asked us to stay for 3 months. And then I stayed for the 3 months. On the provision that either I was good enough or I wasn't. And it was never an issue because I had an opportunity back home to go and play for Limerick, who were at that particular time were managed by Owen Hand. So when I went into Mike Bailey's office after the 3 months, he asked me to stay to the end of the season. And I said, no, I said, it's not a problem. I said, I'm happy to go home. And I happened to come out of his office and walk straight into Jimmy Melia. And for some unknown reason, call it fate, Jimmy persuaded me to just pop home for the weekend and come back on Monday, which I did.
What can you remember? Jimmy Melia, What can you remember about Jimmy Mealy's footwear that day? Well, he wasn't wearing those white shoes again, was he?
I don't think he had them on that particular day. I think he had a brand new pair of Copa Mundials.
But I believe that you had a fondness for playing Paul at a particular place called Langdale's, I think it was.
Langford's. Yeah, we used to go to Langford's and play pool, yeah. Me and Graham Mosley spent some time down at Langford's on a Friday when we were obviously not involved on the Saturday. Just going to have a bit of lunch.
But Graham tells me that you went there for a completely different reason, but we won't dwell on that right now. he's got his knockers, says Graham. When did you actually make your debut for the Albion? It was the season after, I believe it was against Derby at home, was it?
No, I actually made my debut the last game of the season away at Norwich in the Old Force Division. I'd signed after the deadline. Not that I would influence anything anyway, but the FA rules were at the time you couldn't play. So I was allowed play because we had already been relegated.
Hmm. Now, we had a lot of very, very talented players around that time. One that you particularly bonded very much with was Steve Penny.
Yeah, Steve came to the club and played wide right. Fabulous player, great ability, tremendous crosser of a ball. And he was a great lad. The other lad I remember was Gary Howlett. I thought he was a fabulous player. So me and Gaz spent a lot of time together down at Brighton. But there were some very talented players there. As I said, Steve Penny was one of them. I remember another player called Ian Muir.
Yes, of course. Yeah, went on to play for Tranmere as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Great striker. Ball into feet, turn, roll. He wasn't the quickest, but scored goals.
Yeah.
There was a good bunch, to be fair. It was a great bunch of lads. I mean, I bumped into Big Alan Young there a couple of seasons ago, just before I finished on the radio, covering the Huddersfield games. And we had a great catch-up, me and Youngie. He was a character. But they were all great characters, and they were all great. You know, they were very good to me, to be fair. Steve, I still text Fozzie every now and again. Mm. I keep in touch with Graham Pearce. I text Perry Digweed now and again as well, keep in touch with him. But they were all great lads.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I often say to anyone who listens, and particularly on this show, that one of my happiest times ever of watching football was that 84-85 season under Chris Catlin. Were you surprised that we didn't get promoted that year? Because we had a really good chance.
Yeah, again, just sometimes things go a little bit against you. You have a little bit of luck here and there, but I spoke to Chris Catlin. I was at a Brighton game a couple of years ago, and again through the radio, and Cat was actually in the press room, so we had a good catch up as well. I think that the one thing for my time down there was probably maybe a little bit of lack of stability, because if you think I was there, I think I was there 5 seasons,
yeah,
and I had 5 different managers.
Yeah,
when you think I went there under Mike Bailey, then you had Jimmy, Chris Catlin, Alan Mullery. Mullers was brilliant.
Barry Lloyd,
and then Barry Lloyd. So yeah, so maybe that was the one thing at the time. Maybe lacked a little bit of stability.
Okay, so Huddersfield got promoted last year. That was a bit of a surprise to everyone.
Yeah, they've got a fabulous chairman. He's a supporter. He's brought in this chap, David Wagner, who I think coached the under-23s at Dortmund Jürgen Klopp. And he's got them doing different things. You know, they train. If they've got a 7:45 kickoff, they train at 7:45. If they've got a 12 o'clock kickoff, they'll train at 12 o'clock. They also do morning and afternoon sessions. So I think some of the players initially didn't really feel they could buy into it. But since he's got them into it, they've had a terrific season last year. They really did. Yeah. And I'm not a lover of the playoffs, me, because I think if you finish in the top two or the top three, whichever, I think over the 46 games you play, you should go up. But listen, they went up through the playoffs, and the town up here is absolutely buzzing.
I bet it was. But, I mean, the season before, they just survived relegation to League One. Wagner was had just come in and he saved them from relegation. So the form that they showed last year, and last time we were up there, of course, they gave us a proper hounding. And it was probably one of the best team performances against us we saw last season. So we weren't particularly surprised to see them go up via the playoffs eventually, but they did tail off towards the end of the season, almost as if they were saving energy for the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I think he made a couple of changes towards the end, knowing that he was in the playoffs. And I think he just thought, well, rather than get people injured, you know, I'll leave one or two out. We're guaranteed a playoff spot anyway, and I'd rather keep my better players for the playoffs. And that's what he did. Listen, some people would disagree with it. Some people would agree with it. If you're a Huddersfield fan, you'll agree with it. If yeah, you're not, yeah. you will disagree with it. But that's what he did. And I've only met the boy a couple of times. He's a fabulous. He comes, he thinks about it. We've done press conference with him when I was doing the radio. And he's come after we've been Bristol City away the year they nearly got relegated. I think we got beat 3 or 4 nil. Mm. And he came to the press point. You're expecting him to be fuming. And he was very coherent. He said, listen, I've only spent 2 minutes with the players. I've had to come out because I might say something I regret, but we'll have a meeting on everything. So he's very methodical in how he goes about it.
Yeah. And what have you made of both of your old clubs' start in the Premier League?
Well, listen, I think both teams have made a great start, because if you think Huddersfield have been tipped to be relegated straight away, I don't think many people would have said
Brighton, but it was,
but I think most people would have said Huddersfield were the ones. And listen, they've got 15 points. They've had, and as Brighton, Liverpool, you know, you face quality every week. That's the big key. The Championship is a little bit different. You make a mistake in the Championship, sometimes you don't get punished. Mm. You make a mistake in the Premier League, you get punished.
Well, we found that out against Liverpool last Saturday, of course. I mean, they had 5 chances in the game and scored 5 goals. And yet we had the opportunity to go 1-0 up and bring it back to 2-1. You take those chances, you're looking at a completely different game. But they just went on and they thoroughly deserved the victory in the end. But
And Huddersfield found the same. I mean, they went to Arsenal midweek, got beat 5. I mean, I went to the Man City game at home. And listen, they defended for 90 minutes. That's all. That was Huddersfield's game plan. Sit back, let Man City have possession. They passed and probed. They didn't break him down. And Huddersfield scored just before half-time, give them something to hang on to. Mm. But unfortunately, straight after half-time, Man City got a penalty. It was possibly outside the box. But listen, when it goes against you, one apiece, and then 6 minutes, I think it was 6 minutes from the end, Man City get a ricochet. And that's the little bit of luck sometimes you don't get.
Yeah. And how do you see it going on Saturday?
Well, listen, I think Huddersfield have got to win the game. They've got to be looking at, as do Brighton. Brighton have got to look at the Huddersfield and think, we've got to go there and win. Those are the games. You've got to target those. Brighton have got to target Huddersfield. We've got to target Brighton, etc. That's how they've got to go about it.
Interesting that you say we.
I've got a soft spot for Brighton. I'm a Celtic supporter, always have been. So that's the first result I look for on a Saturday. Yeah. The second result I look for, to be fair, is Brighton.
Your Irish accent's got a little bit Yorkshire as well, isn't it?
Well, I've been up here a long time now.
Okay,
my wife is from Yorkshire.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much to Kieran O'Regan.
Cheers, thanks.
Of course, that was Kieran O'Regan, okay, who I spoke to earlier on today. He was good value there.
He sounded great. He sounds in fine form there. You say he's not doing the stuff for Huddersfield Town.
No, he's not doing HTF, whatever it is up there.
But I thought it's not with the BBC. I thought he was doing...
He was working for the BBC, I see. But he's just not doing that anymore.
Yeah,
he was getting a few pelters from some of their fans, apparently.
Oh, right. Now, interesting stuff. I mean, we all remember him. Like I say, he turned up. His debut was the last... last of a game in the first division, and you know he played in the someone's going to remind me, but he was certainly the sub for the cup semi-final. I don't think he made it to the cup final squad. I know he didn't make it to the cup final squad.
But he was on the helicopter and he went to Wembley and everything like that. It was quite an experience.
He was a decent player. I mean,
he went on to play for Ireland as well. And he told me,
to be fair, everyone did back
and,
then.
And he was telling me after we finished recording there, typically, of the time that he was playing with Chris Hughton, of course, as well. So.
Well, yeah, that's a different thing entirely. Who would have been taller? Because maybe these things have passed me by. I just associate Kieran O'Regan with being kind of quite small, kind of very very scrawny, and like I say, a puff of wind would take him over.
Okay, well, I mean, it's a big week coming up. I mean, firstly, the Huddersfield game, and then obviously after that, Spurs at Wembley on Wednesday. So, do you think? How do you think it's going to go on today, Andy? Because it's like, do you think there's going to be people auditioning desperate to play at Wembley, or is it going to be the other way around? People just going to like try and conserve themselves for Wembley?
I don't think Wembley's going to play a factor, play a part in how we play against Huddersfield. I think this, given that we are in direct competition with Huddersfield at the moment, at that end of the table, there's going to be a lot of tension. There's going to be a lot of tension in the game. You look at the results that both sides have had. Typically not a lot of goals in either of their respective games. So this is really not a game you want to go 1-0 down in, I think. I think it's going to be a really hard-fought, tight game.
And if you compare it to last season's game up there, then I'd take any improvement on that. That was probably our most diabolical performance of the season, yeah?
It was our worst performance, their best performance. And,
yeah.
We were thoroughly...
3-1 we got away with.
We got away with, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's it now, unfortunately. That's all we've got time for this week. So, of course, thank you to Alan Ware. Thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you, of course, to Kieran O'Regan there. And we'll see you again next week. Thanks a lot. Bye.